Believe in yourself, believe in your body. Rock, 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 it's the self-esteem party. Yeah. Everyone, welcome to the Self-Esteem Party Podcast. I'm your host, Alana Johnston, and with me is no one. That's right. My sister Allison Johnston was visiting me and supposed to be the guest host. She ditched me. My husband Norm was supposed to join me in helping me intro this podcast. He left the house without a word. So here's what I'm wondering. Am I the problem? Obviously not. Why? Because this old self-esteem is a 10 out of 10 and nothing you haters can do can knock me down. That's right. My advice for the haters, get on board. Look at me. I've got new pants. That's right. I've got a beautiful new floral denim outfit. I've been wearing it absolutely everywhere. Hence why I'm off the charts. I'm not going to stop wearing it and I'm not going to get a new outfit. I deserve happiness. Okay. Who thinks we should get to the episode? Now, this one was a blast. We were set up by the Sonar Network. We will get into it, but I'm very excited for you to check out this week's guest, Cynthia Kiss, right after this break. It's a self-esteem party. It's a self-esteem party. Cynthia, welcome to the Self-Esteem Party Podcast. How are you?
Alana, thank you for having me. I am so honored to be here. I am so excited to see what this will entail. I'm an open book, so let's read me.
Oh my God. You're already my best guest.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
No, I'm very excited to meet you. We were set up by Sonar that I like to call the NAR, just for fun.
Ooh, I like that.
Isn't it fun? It's edgy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I love it. I think it's a little aggressive.
Yeah, the NAR. I've been going, because we just joined the network, which is so exciting.
Yes.
I've been calling everyone my Sonar sisters, but I like the NAR.
You know what? You can call me a Sonar sister, but I'm calling us the NAR.
Hey,
because we got to keep it hardcore on this podcast about self-esteem.
Yes. Yes, we do. Yes. If there's any topic that needs to be hardcore, it's self-esteem.
It's self-esteem. So speaking of, we like to start this podcast with a self-esteem party check-in in terms of how you're feeling about yourself today, recently, in whatever amount of time, whatever the journey is, on a scale of 1 to 10, where would you say you're at self-esteem-wise?
Ooh, I think I'm at like a crisp 7.5.
Crispy indeed. Okay, so you got, so I think 7.5 is a good number.
Me too.
Yeah, feel like that's like things are, it's more than okay. Things are going well, if not a little bit great, but maybe there's a couple things that still need to be done.
Yes.
A few things we're working on or looking in at.
Absolutely.
A room to grow.
Yes. Oh no, for
yes.
sure. I think for me right now to dive in, it's like, and stop me if I ramble, but you know, when your body is kind of like not, like I got a little sick recently. So it's like my mind is one place, but then my body can't like keep up with it. And so then mm-hmm. sometimes can interfere with like self-evaluation. I was like, I want to give you a 10 out of 10, but I'm like, that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at.
Yeah. No, you're completely right. I've talked about how much our physical bodies or environmental factors around us affect our self-esteem. Like for example, it was raining here for like a month straight and I was like, I am depressed.
Yes.
And that makes me feel like a terrible person. And all of this is because it's wet outside.
I so know.
It's like, but your body reacts to things.
Yes.
So it's like being sick. It's when you feel sluggish, you feel slow. When you feel slow, you don't feel like yourself. When you don't feel like yourself, you start questioning, who am I?
Totally.
And now you don't have the energy to answer that.
Right. No, I got it. I got it for you. I can bottle it up for the pod. You know, Sonar.
We need it.
Sisters stick together. But I literally looked at the forecast yesterday and noticed mm-hmm. that it was this afternoon of no rain, so I quickly went to a park and like had an hour outside because I was like, it's not sunny, but at least it's not like torrential downpour, and so I have to get outside as much as possible. And it had been a minute.
Listen, I don't blame you. My sister lives in Toronto. She's coming to visit.
Yes.
She comes here tomorrow. She's so excited because it is so beautiful here.
Yes.
It is the best break.
Yes.
I can offer. Might I invite you to my home? I'd love to have you.
Because you're in Vancouver. You're in Vancouver, right?
No, I'm in LA.
Oh, you're in LA.
That's why I'm on Pacific time. Yes.
Girl.
But I'm from Toronto.
Oh my God.
So that's the connection. That's my NAR connection.
I'm going to the Palm Springs in a few weeks. It's like my little like getaway with my partner. We want to do nothing.
Whoa.
For like a week.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Do nothing. I couldn't agree. I think, you know, the new year had a bit of a slow start. For a lot of people, maybe, I don't know for you, but for a lot of people, I felt like it had a bit of a slow start. And I'm like, now's the time to like self-care yourself into success.
Mine was crazy.
Take care.
My new
really?
Year, it's 2023. I did a gig. And so sometimes when I work, my concept of time is different. And so I rung in the new year and then I went off and did DragCon UK in London. So I was in London as of like the 2nd or 3rd of January. So
whoa.
I was like right away jet lagged doing this other thing. It was a really exciting, amazing thing. So the front end of 2023 started out so strong that I'm like, I just need like a little week by a pool or something.
So you're
a little more relaxed.
Okay. That's so yeah. Okay.
Because it was wild.
First of all, good on you. Good on you for scheduling a break.
Need to.
Because that sounds like a whirlwind of a new year.
No, absolutely.
And the new year's already overwhelming.
Oh my God, completely. And like, you let me know if I'm rambling too much about like, if there's topics you want to talk about, because for my partner and I, it's been like a whirlwind, like year and change. Cause basically since the show came out, I was on the second season of Canada's Drag Race. Since the airing of that, it's been like a complete, kind of like a tectonic shift in my life. Like it's been epic. And then, you know, there's also spillover in your loved ones realities now. So my partner, he's like my rock and he's been so great. We've moved like 3 times since the show. It's just been like endless because we're always just like evolving with our situation. So this trip is like my huge, we did it. Let's take a knee. Like, let's just like get some rest, some R&R. So we're really looking forward to it.
Oh my God. This is the topic I want to cover. Let's talk about what you do.
Yes, absolutely.
tell us everything. And then I want to hear about how your job affects how you feel. Because, you know, if it does for comedians, I don't see why it wouldn't for you too.
Completely.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So it's like, tell me everything.
Cool. So I consider myself a drag entertainer, a drag artist, a drag queen. I love making people laugh. I love working on cool projects with incredible, talented people. I just love surrounding myself with creativity, and drag gets to be my female gender expression. I get to channel the comedic greats of like Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, Maya Rudolph, and then shake that up in a cocktail with like fashion and other pop culture references. That really is Cynthia Kiss. I love electronic dance music. That's where my name comes from. It's spelt with an S, Cynthia with an S, because I love like synthesizer, electropop music. And so all that kind of combined, it's like the amalgamation of the first 30 years of my life. I then get to kind of turn it into this drag persona and travel Canada and now kind of outside of Canada, the world. Like I was just in Europe and we're going back soon. So it's been epic since going on Drag Race Canada. The opportunities are just like, it's tenfold. It's really exciting. But it also comes with new terrain. There's times where I'm like, holy smokes, holy guacamole, you know, like, what are we doing here? Yeah.
So it's a 2-part question.
I love it.
One, what was it before the show?
So for me,
what was the experience?
The show, like drag in my life before the show was like, I had a weekly show downtown on Davie Street in Vancouver with my gal pals, the Brat Pack. We actually all got cast on the show at the same time. So the Brat Pack is a collective I've been part of for like 5 years. It's so crazy that we all got on the show at the same time. And we have music out together. Stream our song Shine. It's on Spotify. It's on Apple Music. Wherever you get music, listen to Shine. Shine! and then literally, it was more modest, right? Like I had a full-time job. I worked in like corporate fashion design. So I've done menswear and womenswear design for like kind of clothes you'd buy at like malls. You know what I mean?
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
You know, like it's kind of like your H&Ms, your Uniqlo's, that kind of tier of fashion. But it's hustle, right? Like to do that kind of corporate job. I balanced my drag part-time. And then now it's the full shebang. I'm like, Cynthia is my everything. It keeps the lights on, keeps everything going. So I'm like a full drag queen since the show.
So my part two of the question of asking what it was before, what are some dialogues or narratives that changed in your head from before the show to after the show? Like an example would be if before the show you're thinking I'm nothing, and then after the show you're like I'm something.
Yeah.
What would be whether positive or negative?
Do you know
it's like whatever way.
You know what one that kind of it clicked the other day? I was like, this is all I've ever wanted to come true, and then it comes true, and then you're kind of it's euphoric, and then you're left kind of raw, and it's almost like it sounds insane, but it's also like, what's next? Like there's been pockets of I've lost my like North Star because I got to achieve it. So it's an incredible kind of level up of sorts where I always wanted to be on Drag Race, and then it happens, and then you're like, oh shit, like where do I go from here? Like what is next?
Oh my God.
So there's been this, yeah. I don't even know quite the words to describe it, but it can almost sometimes feel like there now needs to be a new kind of like thing to click in and be the North Star, the goal. And music has been a huge part of that. Like making music has been incredible. It's just kind of understanding that goals can shift, things can change, and nothing is permanent. And so it's just kind of empowering, but it can be scary too. Now I'm like, what am I doing?
Oh my God, it's so scary. Like the goals of mine I've achieved or at least come really close to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's really scary because you go, I thought it was going to be this and it was all these things, mm-hmm. but, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but there's like a little bit of emptiness or like kind of mourning
the
thank loss you for of saying, that dream.
Thank you for saying empty. That was probably the word I was dancing around because it sounds extreme, but there is a degree of emptiness when it's almost like, okay, this happened. It was successful. It was awesome. But now like, what is next? What is that thing I then think about as the like long-term goal?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think sometimes, because it can change, we can be cerebral about mm-hmm. it and think our way through to a new goal, or something just presents itself to you and you're like, I would have never even thought.
Yes.
For me, maybe more writing jobs. And I'm like, I'd have never thought of myself as a writer if you'd told me this however many years ago.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have even been like, one day I want to write.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you're like, oh my God, I love it.
Yeah.
And I still, of course, like I prominently perform, but that's just like a bonus type of thing. Now, do you, in this next phase of your life and mm-hmm. kind of navigating your way through, are you very open to saying yes to things that maybe you hadn't thought of?
Oh my goodness, absolutely. I think my whole life, I've always believed in like opportunity presenting itself and saying no sometimes within the respective boundaries. But for the most part, being really game to like try things out, work with different people, work with different mediums, wearing different hats, if you will. Like today I'm more of like, you know, I run my podcast and then I also am recording music. And then, you know, it'd be cool to get into like VO work. Like, I think in this economy.
Yes. That's what this podcast is about, Cynthia. Yeah, the economy.
Well, you know what I mean? Like protection in having many skills and making yourself integratable into many different situations. So that's why I see it as both philosophical, but then also practical, where I'm like, I don't know. It's very stimulating to try different things. It can be super scary. Sometimes I'm like, my God, can't I just have like a boring 9-to-5 job? But that's too simple. No shade
too
to those
simple,
that do that. But yeah.
Too predictable for me, because I understand the struggle of wanting stability,
mm-hmm.
but repetition for me, like I'm already on repeat with enough things in my life. I'm like, if you're telling me 40 hours a week is like guaranteed repetition for me, I'm like, I crumble. I've only ever had part-time. Like I've never, you know what I mean? I'm like, I've had a really hard time, like the office jobs I've had and stuff like that, under a year.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Couldn't hack it.
Well, I did it. That's the thing. My corporate design life was very 9-to-5. And there was a point there where, I kind of was sitting at my desk, you know, thinking like, is this where I see myself? You kind of think forward facing, and it's so cool that drag ended up being something a little more stable during COVID.
Yeah.
Like I was let go during COVID-19, and I was kind of left floating a little bit, and it was kind of poetic that my drag ultimately was there for me, whereas like what I thought this cushy corporate job was going to be the thing that bubble wrapped my life, but instead it was the thing I built myself. I built with my friends, yeah. I built with my community, and that actually ended up being the way I could like live my life. Like I also have my partner who I love, and he's been there for me, and obviously support from the government, but drag got me back on track. Like I feel very fortunate to listen to that and lean into that.
Well, I think it's one of those things that you're like, you do something with your friends and you do it because it's fun, it's exciting, and you're just having fun for shits and giggles. And then that ends up being the thing you get paid for because you're willing to put the most amount of you into it because yeah. It's so much fun.
Absolutely.
So when you're working hard, it just might not feel like it. And we're also working, because I don't know what your situation was, but like, I'm doing comedy easily a decade, not making a cent. Like, yeah. Like you know right? what I mean? I'm like, yeah. I literally put it like an intern. Mm-hmm. I put in my time.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Oh, completely.
So you're like, yeah, so did all my friends. We were doing this shit. All the greats that you see. Because like in doing drag, like you said already, lots of comedy in that. You yes. said Amy Poehler, Tina Fey, totally. Like you said, perfect
Love.
References.
Love.
Tons of comedy. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you're an Amy Sedaris fan, but I imagine
100%
Strangers
with Candy, yes.
So over the top. Yes. Such a good show.
I also love the new show she started where she does more like home crafts.
And her book.
Yes.
That came out a while ago, but she had that show. It's kind of like she has this whole other like skill of that's like very cult following and now has gotten like bigger, but she yeah. just does it because she likes it.
And so like, that's
just
so
like, I'm crafty.
How appropriate to bring up because it's what you're talking about. It's the things that just stay genuine to you that can ultimately yeah. bring quote unquote success, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it's like, I'm not saying it's all fun and games the whole time. Work is still work. Yes. Even if you have friends at work, say at your old job that you mm-hmm. used to have, a job is like still a job, but you're like any amount of like personal joy I can get in this is like for the win. You're like, totally. Yes, I will hang on to this yes. for the life of mm-hmm. me.
And it's funny because at one point it's almost like a double-edged sword because when the hobby becomes the full time, again, it's that emptiness. It's like, oh, this yeah. used to be the thing I would do just purely for joy. And when you do tack on like kind of job responsibilities every once in a while that mm. can get in the way of your gratitude. So I love us yes. talking about it full picture because we'll be on the road, I'm with my queens and I'm like gratitude check. If we have like a really yes. cool like vista or lookout or like we're at somewhere cool doing something neat, it's like let's just like soak it in, you know, take it in, soak it up. It's cool what we get to do, and so being very grateful of that.
I'm big on gratitude lists yeah. in daily journaling, and so I don't always remember to do it, but for the most part I do. Sometimes it'll be just three things that like the only things I can think of that yes. morning or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, you really do need to take a second to stop, because otherwise, because the times that I don't, I just pity myself because I think I have nothing. Mm-hmm. I tell myself a story.
Yes.
And I don't stop and go, wait a second, Elena, you have a car. You could go anywhere you wanted right now. You yeah. could go to the beach. You could go to a mountain. Because you have some rinky-dink car in your driveway. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's like, I have freedom.
Yes.
Like, I was like, that's huge. Mm-hmm. Huge to be grateful for. The smallest little thing, right?
Totally.
Turns your day around. What would you say something, obviously you were grateful to be on the show.
Yeah.
A dream come true. Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely. But what is something you're grateful for now since on a personal note?
Mm-hmm.
Of like maybe how something you've learned or something like that you got from that experience.
I think one of the things about going on reality TV is you see a side of yourself that has always been there, but you don't know it. They say if you were to see yourself walk past you, you wouldn't even recognize that person because we're not trained to see the mirror image, which is technically the true image of ourselves, like our reflection. Wow. Okay. And so going on the show, I saw some of my blind spots. I saw some of the skills in my life I can keep developing. Some of the areas that the camera, the experience captured when you put yourself you sacrifice yourself to the public, to this medium, this form of the show. It taught me some of my weaknesses, but also some of my strengths, and mm-hmm. things that I kind of was modest about in the past and would maybe second guess or have a narrative that like, oh, that's not you. You don't do that. Or, oh, that's not really your thing. Right. Sometimes you kind of stick your neck up and you're like, wait, no, maybe I can do that. Maybe I am capable of that. So the show was like a really radical kind of experience of getting to know myself a little bit better. And then also deciding what was like the edit of a television show and what narratives do I want to own and just kind of like move forward with. Because it's just a show.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like, it is just a, you know, like a 10 episode reality competition. It kind of gets, there's so much television out there that it can, you know, it dissipates. It feels intense at the time. But now I feel like I'm in a place where I can just choose what I learned from that experience, humbling, and also like where I want to like, you know, flex. It's like, I was good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I've done some, not a show like this, mm-hmm. but I've done like some hosting of some reality mm-hmm. stuff. And it is, when I'm doing it, I see myself in such a way, right? I'm like, and then when I see it, I'm like, is this what I look like and sound like to everybody?
Right?
Like, and it's not necessarily negative, but it's like you're saying, I just don't recognize myself.
Slightly
like,
different.
Oh, slightly different. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, my face moves like that, but it feels like this. Even mm-hmm. and these are all just kind of more vain things I'm saying, but even like my energy, like seeing that on camera, I'm very energetic. My hands are flailing.
I love it.
I love it.
Yeah, I do.
But I remember the way I felt in those moments, mm-hmm. and then to see that it looks so different.
Yes.
I think it really taught me that I'm so much harsher on myself than I think I am.
Yeah.
Like, I watched it and I was like, this is fine. All mm-hmm. of this is fine.
Totally.
I was going, who is this monster? You know what I mean? But I remember at the time coming home after work and you know what I mean? It's not good enough. It's not funny enough.
Like, mm-hmm.
I'm sure you have the same thing. You hold yourself to an impossible standard. It's how you achieve what feels like impossible at times. It's true. You got to raise that bar. You have to.
Totally.
But to what end?
I know, right? Exactly. To what end?
Point, yeah. At what point do we, like you said earlier, boundary?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, totally.
Yeah.
I think that's where I like kind of referencing the point in time. It's almost like a year and change ago. Like at this point, it just starts to become like a distant memory. And then I have my like cliff notes of what I want to take with it. It's not something I lie in bed with. I have other childhood traumas to take up that space.
We're busy. I am filled
crowded
to the
in
brim.
There.
Thanks. Yeah, it's nice and crowded.
Yeah.
It's an all ages club and everybody's looking to get out tonight.
Sorry, 2021 trauma. We've got something in the 90s just playing on loop. Sorry about it.
I am so booked up right now.
Yeah.
It's not even funny.
Exactly.
I know exactly. Like, it has come up on this podcast so many times. People, something that affects their self esteem is being worried about like what other people think. And I reassure people. Yes, sometimes people are going to think thoughts about you, but for a fleeting moment, because I was like, we are so up our own butts about our shit,
absolutely.
Literally, that I'm like, there's no room for you in my life.
Completely.
There's no room for the things I am judging about you.
No, totally. It's the main character syndrome that we all are privy and guilty of, where it's like, mm-hmm. how are we gonna think about anyone else when we're thinking about the main character syndrome at the same time? It takes up too much space.
I'm sitting here writing a daily sitcom. I'm exhausted.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm all the characters. I'm the neighbor.
Yeah.
I'm the sister.
Yeah. No, totally. I'm the
sister. My pilot is just about two sisters and their neighbor. And everyone's like, cool show, guys.
I would watch
it.
No, I would watch it. I'm here for that.
Well, here's the thing. It's like, does the neighbor like one of us? Do we both like the neighbor? Mm-hmm. What's going on? Is it friends more than with the other? Is there a feud?
What's the childhood dynamic between the siblings? I love sibling dynamics.
I love siblings. Oh, my God.
It's one of my first questions.
I am so Well, how, okay, do you have siblings? If so, how many?
Of course. So I have two biological siblings. That makes me the middle. And then I have two stepsisters. So in total, we're five. And then me and my stepsister, Vanessa, still sit in the middle. So we have, like, double middle children syndrome, where we're just like, oh, look at me, at, like, all times.
I'm a middle child, a double middle child as well. There's four of us. I'm a double.
Right? See?
And boy, does it show.
Yes.
It really, stuff like that.
It's why we have podcasts.
It's why we have podcasts. Oh my God, of course. It's why my brother's a responsible one. It's my why my little sister's the aloof one. It's why my middle sister and I, that are the middle kids together,
you hold
struggle
together
the most.
Yes.
Yeah. It's like, I'm like, listen, we'll sort this. We'll, I'm friends with you. Then I'll be friends with you. And we'll spread it around.
Totally. I think it's why I do yoga. I need to be, I'm so flexible. I'm like,
I do yoga.
I always balance between being flexible and people pleasing. That's one of the things I've also learned in the last little bit, is kind of drawing the line in the sand where I'm like, ooh, okay, I think I have been a little too bendy here. I need to, you know, put my line in the sand, because sometimes working in a group, you want to make sure it's, you know, there's a couple cooks in the kitchen. Not every chef can put in all the ingredients, so it'll taste weird. You know, you take your times to input. But then the odd time where I'm like, I really should have said something. That was like a really bad call. It's like, and that can be a boundary. That's where it's like, no, don't always worry about people pleasing. But I attribute that to one of the more challenging sides of being the middle child. Is it's, you're very used to just like, okay, recalibrate. This is the vibe for right now when I'm working with like an older sibling. Or it's like, okay, I will recalibrate, understand compromise when you have younger siblings to maybe they take priority or you have to take care of them. There's responsibility there. So, but I, in the end of the day, I feel like I'm very, I can talk to anyone. I can, I like to see it as a superpower and not get too bogged down about it. But it's, there's two sides to every coin, right?
You got to be a chameleon.
Yeah.
Because you have, you're trying to give everybody what they need in that moment.
As the wigs, the wigs behind, you want to talk chameleon. I think I have that wig just right here. It's my little shaggy cut right there. I should have worn it today.
Should have worn it.
Yeah, should have worn it. Should have done it. Oh my God. Amazing.
Thank God this isn't video. You're so lucky.
I'm telling you, I'm babysitting a pimple. I don't know where it came from.
I would never do
it. It's one of those deep, deep pimples where it doesn't have like I can't squeeze it. And I'm the type, I like to pop my zits.
I love to pick at my face. I used to have really bad, I think because my hormones changed in my 30s.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still in my 30s, but early
30s. I was going to say, I was like, are you not in your 30s anymore? Look incredible. I'm 52.
I'll be 40 soon enough. So
cool.
Wow. These bangs are working wonders.
But the hormone shift, did your skin react?
Yeah, so hormone shift, so my skin reacts. Very common. It's kind of like almost a beard of acne that's like so deep under the skin, there's no whitehead and there never will be. And it just puffs up and goes down and they're hard and they hurt.
Yes.
And your face hurts.
Yeah.
And it's like, so I had that. I was in a really, oh, listen to this. You're going to love to hate this story. I was dating someone at the time. He was very vain. Okay. And I remember he offered me money to get laser treatment for my face, unprompted.
Oh my goodness. Only in LA.
I wasn't like, only in LA. I wasn't like, oh, I want to get this done, but I'm broke and whatever. He was like, well, have you ever thought about this? I'll pay for it. And I was like, I don't have as big of a problem with this as you do. What do you know?
Oh my goodness.
Exactly. We break up. I change my skin products to like more, less harsh things, coconut oil, like, you know, really tone it down. Face clears up.
He was the problem.
It was the stress. He was the problem. I swear it.
Mm-hmm.
Offering me money to fix my face when I was like, I never said it was a problem.
Yeah.
I, you know, it would be like, you know how it is. If you're going to be on camera or whatever, there's makeup artists, you can put makeup on.
Yes.
You can cover
you
shit
can make
up.
It work.
That's everybody.
Absolutely.
There's somebody's entire job and career.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
And it's something
so...
So
I'm not sweating it.
It's the messaging behind. It's like, it's generous in a really backhanded way where it's like all of a sudden they're giving you a complex. I'm glad you're out of that situation, Alana.
I'm so glad to be out of that. You'll notice the skin now. This is like much clearer. Don't look at this rosacea.
Hey.
This
it's blush.
Separate.
It's blush.
It's blush. Don't look at my uneven blush. Thank you.
I was in a rush.
Just look at my bangs. Yes. Yeah, but just focus on my bangs. Thanks.
Oh, I hear you about skin. It's a tricky thing. I grew up with a very troublesome acne myself. I had to go on Accutane.
Oh my God, my siblings went on that. It's deadly.
It's intense.
How scary for young people to be going on this. It's a lot.
Yeah. It's pretty intense. That's for me, I don't love needles, and we had to do monthly blood work to make sure everything was staying good in the insides of my body. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, okay? I wanted to get rid of my acne.
This episode is over.
Yeah, exactly.
Excuse me.
I thought you were a drag queen doctor.
I was so confused.
But yeah, so I always empathize with troublesome complexion. It's hard. It's hard to look in the mirror and see that.
Did that take a toll on you?
It probably, absolutely. I think like the people pleasing complex extends very seamlessly to like my aesthetic and how I put myself into the world. Like I modeled when I was younger, and there's something complex about, you know, pretty privilege and it awarding opportunity and like things in this world, but then you also want to you find ways and tricks and habits to maintain that, whether it be a certain body size or, you know, clear complexion or what have you, the gamut of things you can run in your list of, you know, whiter teeth, you know, clearer skin, like certain haircuts, certain style, like I believe in like curating your life, but then letting it not consume you, you know?
Yeah.
Things being chosen from a place of like joy rather than like vanity and power, you know?
Well, it's like, do what you can maintain. It's the same with weight.
Completely.
At a certain point, you can work out, you can do all this dieting, a million and one things, but at a certain point, your body goes, this is my weight.
Yes.
Like I don't know what that number is for anybody. Mm-hmm. It's probably not even a number. It's just like the frame and the way things feel for you.
Truly.
It's probably like, this is just it.
Yeah.
Like, stop.
No, exactly.
You know what? I feel like I've been so caught up in that. I used to be real, just so unhealthy relationship with food and all this kind of stuff, you know? And I think it's very common in the industry and with entertainment and stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely.
Pressure. Yeah, exactly.
It's that classic conundrum of like, in an industry such as entertainment, a lot of factors you can't control. So it's one of the factors you can control. And so there, right there, it's like a handle to hold on to and be like, well, at least I can control, you know, still fitting into certain costumes, or like letting that be, you know, not another variable that quote unquote holds you back. It's all mental.
Yeah.
All bodies are beautiful. And my new mantras as I've like dove into yoga is just an able body that I'm like, I can hold myself up. I can like do a couple tricks, you know, for shows and things. And I don't injure myself because my body, our bodies as performers are, it's so corny, but they're temples. You really have to treat them with respect. And that includes proper diet nutrition, not like vain diet nutrition where it's like, I'm doing this to be skinny. It's like,
exactly.
No. Exactly. It's not.
I took it too
not
far.
About that. Yeah.
Yeah. I took it too far. And it's interesting with the healthy eating. Just, you know, a lot of people struggle with weight and body image and body dysmorphia and everything like that. And I'm trying to eat for the insides. Do you know what I mean? Like,
oh,
I'm
totally.
Just like, I don't want to wake up with stomach ache or my throat burns or like whatever. I'm like, I just want to be like, okay, I'm awake and all is well. And then off I go with my day.
No, totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like a good BM in the morning indicates.
Now we're talking.
A balanced diet with some grains, some fruit and veggie. We're good to go.
You need the grains, guys. You need the grains.
You
I'm
going to
say
grains.
This right now. You need the grains. And if you have a gluten intolerance, there's a million other ways to get grains, but you need them. Anyone cutting them out, you're going to gain the weight back and then some. I'm sorry. It's true. I'm saying it.
And those BMs. And those BMs. You will go every day.
You will go every day. That's how you're going to lose your weight. Literally push it out of your body.
Yuh-huh. Yes.
Yuh-huh.
Yuh-huh.
Huge agreement.
Yeah.
So, okay, you find yourself now in this place in life where, all these fantastic things are happening that you had dreamed of, and now new things and different opportunities and stuff like that. What are some of your, amidst the madness of it all, and like you said, your new year really started off with a bang.
Yeah.
What would be some of your day-to-day self-care tips or routine? Like, it sounds like you do yoga.
I'm an avid stretcher. Pretty frequently. I'm an avid stretcher.
Okay, yeah.
I got this, like, inch-thick mat. It's like a marshmallow. You can, like, sink into it. And I just, when I watch TV, I'm just doing my slow, like, yin-style stretches. Because I feel like it's the physical stress being kind of wringed out like a towel. It's like, just try not to hold on to that, Daniel. Like, let that go. That's kind of, that to me is as daily as possible. And I simplify it. Like, I just have little pillows and stuff. It's just, instead of sitting on the couch watching TV, I feel less guilty if I'm like stretching. And now I'm addicted. It feels like a massage. For me, the way I stretch, it feels like a massage. So I stretch, and I believe in just, like, you know, the power of cannabis, but obviously being mindful of too much being too much. But I do love a little bit of weed for self-care. And then,
oh my God, I love it.
On a daily basis, those are probably the two. And respecting my calendar. I really do set it and forget it. I like to put things in and a time and a place that I'm going to work on them and know that I don't have to think about it until it says on the calendar, time to think about it. Because doing double duty is exhausting and I could obsess all day long. So my calendar, these tools help me stay kind of, you know, calm when I need to. It's like I activate that part of my brain when I need to. Yeah. But otherwise I don't, because it's like, oh, I'm not thinking about, you know, DragCon LA in May right now because I've put it in the list. Like, I'm going to deal with that this afternoon, like later from now.
I've never really heard that.
I grew up
putting it in and walking away type of thing. Yeah.
I like became obsessed with to-do lists when I was growing up and my parents divorced, and I found myself, they did 50-50 custody, and I was constantly like moving around, and also they worked a ton, so they had to put us in tons of extracurriculars, and I just found it was the only way I could like manage it all, the only sense of control. Again, control, noticing how that's popping up a few times.
I know.
But in some ways, I let it work for me. You know, I don't let it control all aspects of my life because it's a tool. Mm-hmm. I like to see it as a tool, because otherwise, if I forget it and I don't put it in the calendar, it doesn't happen. And then it becomes dramatic because it's something you forgot. This way, I just kind of stay accountable to everyone and myself.
Yeah.
Because I don't journal. I don't journal, but I do religiously calendar. And in some ways, I know it's not the same, but it is in a sense that I have a check-in with myself, because I ask myself, because I do all of it, like the downtime as well. Like, I put that in there because it's like, that's blocked off. That's nothing time. That's yours. And I find that helpful.
Wow.
Yeah. It's probably a bit intense, but
fantastic. I really like what you're saying, because I'm doing it the other way, your old way of to-do lists. Mm-hmm. Like you said, growing up and everything like that. And I'm always like checking and double checking and triple checking things because I don't want to forget it. But I'm like, I never forget. If I put it in my calendar right away, I'm like, I'm not forgetting. And it's not because I'm reminding myself 100 times.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of, it's there. I'm just not forgetting
because I wrote it down already. Yeah.
It's waiting for you.
I like that though.
But it's there. And I find sometimes the creative process, it then opens up like my mind's eye for those kind of, you know, you have thoughts that pop into your head.
Mm-hmm.
They do. And you, like, that's where I quickly put it. Like, I jot it down. Or it's like, I don't know. I feel like it starts to warm my brain up for, like, game day. It's like, oh, I know I'm going to do a writing session here. I know it's happening. So maybe if I, like, have a great conversation with a friend and an anecdote kind of presents itself, I was like, ooh, I'm going to quickly, like, bookmark that. And then know it's ready to get to when I'm, like, really going to get into a writing session. It's just my style. Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes it's a bit over the top. I know the other girls in Brat Pack, they're like, yes, Cynthia, your calendar. But it's, like, it's how we get lots done.
I like it. Right? I like the scheduling of the downtime. I can accomplish things in the day. If I have a to-do list, I can get the whole list done.
Hell yes.
But I have a hard time with the order of things, unless it's, like, for example, today we had a scheduled time.
Oh, I kept moving it on you. I was the worst. I was like, can we do it this time?
No, I had to. No, It totally worked out because look at this. We're having this beautiful Thursday together. We're having a great time. I love it. I love it. It worked out better this way too because I got a lot done this morning, so I'm here in a good mood.
See?
You know, when you just, this it isn't my good. List. So this is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
This is what I'm saying. I have no rhyme or reason to it. I'll wake up at 6 a.m. and just start blasting off emails like a maniac.
I love you.
And then I'm like, I need, oh my God, I'm that morning texter. Come 7 a.m. First of all, in my head, it's always 8 or 9 because I'm like, the day has escaped me. I'm texting people at 7. They're like, I'm not awake. Stop texting me. And I'm like, I'm so sorry. You are correct. That was not okay of me.
Yes.
But putting a time on something is, you know, it'll make me feel bad if I can't accomplish it. But damn, does it make you feel good when you can? When you can stick with a time, show up on time, stay the allotted amount of
and
time.
Alana, let me make you feel better. Things move as the day goes along. Like I'll see my upcoming do this now, and I'm like, no, I want a nap. And then I just move it down. Or even sometimes I will retroactively rejig the calendar of what I actually did, and that's what feels like journaling to me, because then I get to look at kind of the productivity of my week. So I see how many blocks were like actually like work. It's working for yourself. That's been a shift that's new for me. So I'm like, this calendar is somehow my like boss. Like it's me staying accountable. I don't know.
Your schedule is all over the place now. When you have your corporate job that you said was pretty much like a 9 to 5, you knew where you were going to be. You don't have to write down every day, go to work.
Yes.
You knew.
I was just
but
there.
If here you're in London all of a sudden in the beginning of the year, you're going to be going back. You're doing a million and one things. Mm-hmm. It's like you have to be good at that because when you don't show up to somewhere, you don't get paid.
Amen.
You know, and it's I need to get paid. And then you don't get hired again, right? It's like, can't mess around with stuff like that.
Yeah. It's the call, isn't it? It's always the second opportunity. I love like the one opportunity, but when you get asked back, it's like, oh yeah, I did a good job.
Oh my God, because you're like, I did good. Yes! Yeah. This is the whole thing of we were saying with creating with your friends and stuff. Yeah. Maybe those friends go off and do other projects or get hired in other places. And then when they reach out to you or you did something in a director 2 years later, or a booker is like, oh, hey, do you want to come back? Mm-hmm. You're like, I made an impression. Like, talk about a self-esteem boost.
Oh, I know. I love when people, you know, it's the fruits of your labor, right? Like certain things, they bloom in different seasons, and that they can go full years where it's like, you never knew that connection's still kind of working for your behalf somewhere off to the kind of sideline.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, it gives you this fuck you everyone moment. Not really. Listen, that's not the mentality I have. But I like, let me just explain. No, let me just the NAR. Let me just explain.
And call.
Let me just explain. It's kind of like when something pays off. Like for example, people I used to do live shows with now hiring me for other gigs. It makes me be like, fuck off everyone. I was right. I knew it. That's what I mean. I'm not saying people hate on me, but there's people that are competitive, people that doubt, people maybe keeping it to themselves and whatever, and you want to be like, I was right. All those years ago when I was doing these stupid ass shows that nobody thought anything of, and I was like, put my heart into it and really tried to do a good job, I was right.
Oh, for sure.
What a feeling.
Oh, I know.
Oh my God, what a feeling.
Oh, as a little queer kid from like a small town in Ontario, I took I was right to the bank. Like I literally
Oh yeah, you did.
That was my like missionato in life for like the longest time was the I was right.
Yeah.
So I have dipped into that motivation. I told you so's. It's it can be empowering because it's self-love, you know? There's
it can
ways
be empowering.
to spin that where it can be less about, you know, boo you, but more go me. You know, I think there's that that balance because I've learned with age to not always let it be pushing anyone down, but kind of proving your spot at the table. It's like, no, I do deserve to be here. You do too, but I do. You know, this for the following reasons. Let me explain that.
There's room for all of us and we'll all get there at different times in different ways. So it's like a version. Even if you're like, you set out to do something in the entertainment industry and then you end up leaving it, it's like But then you could stumble into this other thing that ends up, you're like, oh, this is what happiness is.
Totally.
Absolutely. Turns out having this nice house and a paycheck and money makes me really happy.
Yeah, well, that's the danger of people pleasing, you know? Right? Your goalpost is always moving and it's not genuine to you. So that's been a huge wake-up call where it's like, okay, enough of what everyone wants. What do you want? Because you have to live with yourself. Like that, like whatever you're signing up for, it's like, you want to do that, right? Like if that's a really important thing to continually ask yourself, because, you know, you can get stuck on these trajectories that otherwise, you know, you have, that's what like a midlife crisis is, right? Someone wakes up and they're like, what am I, where am I, how am I? You know, my father, he like came out of the closet at the age of like 40. Like my dad and myself came out of the closet at like the same time because of like us just having, you know, the same kind of awakening. His just was so much later, and I can only imagine almost that like profound sense of lost time where you're like, I've let so much of my life go by as, you know, pretending I'm a straight, you know, cis male, but he's queer. And so I always look at my dad as like a reminder of just making sure to be like in tune with yourself, and that is appropriate, whatever it looks like.
I feel like the discoveries that I've made in my life, sometimes I'd get frustrated at the timing, because like you said, mourning that what could be perceived as lost time. But then I just try to tell myself, you know, maybe I couldn't have handled it then. Maybe I thought I could.
Yeah.
But maybe the universe, like me not getting jobs, say big jobs or something like that, that I came close to. And then I'm like, well, what if I did get it? And then I was so caught up in this illness or caught up in this negative state of mind that I then publicly embarrass myself at the job and fuck it up big time.
Right. Like, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
That is such a cool story about now about your dad. You said your dad was 40. May I ask how old you were?
Yeah. Like, these are rough estimates. Like I was around 16 and he was in his like early 40s. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Cause I was, I went to like an arts high school that was very accepting. I mentioned I'm small from a smaller town. But this arts high school was like my island, my little saving grace. And it was this safe high school experience that more and more is common, you know, for younger generations. But, you know, like 10, 15 years ago, you can't guarantee that every, you know, queer child feels seen and safe in their high school experience. So I still feel very beneficial that this arts program, this high school really fostered this sensitive little, you know, weirdo. And I got to really find kind of my artistic voice, and that helped me set myself up for future success, kind of brave the world outside of that as I kind of became older. But yeah, the experience of coming out at the same time as my dad, it was complex and complicated, because I look at an adult in my life kind of not understanding his relationship with shame about his queer identity, because it can sometimes, if not spoken, I interpret it as like, oh, is there something shameful about being queer? Like being gay? Like what's so wrong about this? He had divorced my mother like years and years prior, like a good chunk of time. And then later he kind of had this self-discovery. It wasn't all kind of tied up with the divorce itself. So there's just some unspoken messaging at the time that I was like, but I don't agree with that. And then, you know, he had his thoughts about how I was living my life and my identity. And so there was just clash of opinions.
Yeah, I can imagine. It seems like he probably did not have the same high school experience as you.
No.
So I'm sure it was a very different...
I like that you bring that up. Because me mentioning, you know, context is everything. The time he grew up, like, it was a very, very different time to be gay. And it was more dangerous. It was more, you know, it was obviously, like, tied up with like the HIV crisis. So all of a sudden you have an actual like illness, a real risk, a factor out there that I think it terrified him, and he lived in his little like Catholic bubble for a long time. And I got to be his like ambassador, kind of the person who gets to kind of walk a little braver and get him out of that mindset. So I'm proud of that.
None of my parents have come out. I'm sick of this.
Ah, exactly. Who's gay? Who's gay?
Here I am working. Yeah. One of you better say something and now.
At Thanksgiving.
You and guys are embarrassing me. Yeah. You make me look like an asshole.
Come out of the closet, pass the turkey.
I shouldn't be hosting this podcast. I've got nothing but with these boring ass parents of mine. I'm so sorry. I apologize.
Oh my God, don't you apologize. Oh no. No.
My mom has a lot of interesting stories she brought to the table that I feel like really created some conflict.
Oh my God,
some
yes.
Complications.
Well, are you similar to your mother in any way? Like,
yes. Yeah. Oh, no. Exactly. Yeah. Similar to her. So that's the complication of it. Yeah. The resistance to
totally.
That. But later in life, when I realized those similarities, and obviously it's a different situation with your dad, but realizing common things you might have in common that you totally. Didn't quite know, you're like, it's exactly what you said, where I was able to go back and be like, oh, when you were doing this or being this, it was because you had experienced this.
Yeah.
And I had a much more privileged, like my mom is from Syria. So she grew up very different than I did.
Oh, of
course. We had very different experiences. Yeah. Yes. So when she was so strict and stuff, I was like, what the fuck? And would lie and this and that. And then I'm like, oh, Alana, like I went to Syria and met all the rest of her family and everything and saw where she grew up. And I was like, oh yeah, that is why.
Yeah.
It's a different place.
Completely. Yeah. It's wild. And I think like at certain points, like it's natural when you're similar to a parent. In my experience, there was a bit of enmeshment happening, like at certain points where your parents really see you as an extension of them. And it was a moment where it's like, albeit our sexual identity, our orientation is aligned, we are two separate people, and that is okay. When I do certain things, it's not a reflection of you. I grew up with lots of teachers, and so I think sometimes teachers in small communities can fall prey to almost like schoolyard dynamics. Like I find teachers are very self-conscious amongst each other. Like,
yeah,
they can get.
My parents were teachers.
See, okay, we're the same. We're the same person.
We're the same. We're the middle child. Like, we really are. Because everything you're saying, I'm like, oh no, it was nothing but drama. Yeah. They might as well have been the students. It was so much drama.
I think sometimes they can fall to that habit, and so you know that's where a lot of the friction lied. And so, me moving to the West Coast, it was like a real empowering moment, because I kind of got to claim a whole side of the country, a whole time zone that's like mine. And I'm sorry I thrived. Like, that's where,
oh my God,
Cynthia,
that's why I
was
moved
born
here.
Like, literally, we are the same person. So you get it.
I will also change my name to Cynthia with an S.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, what's the meaning behind this? Well, I one time met somebody and I thought, you know what, I'm taking this.
Yeah, it's mine now.
Within the hour I changed my name.
They're like, I think that's identity theft. Yeah.
I don't think that's okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this is okay. We're reaching the end. I hate it. It's like I schedule the podcast, but then I get upset when it's over. But then I have to remind myself what my attention span is. And what I present the podcast to.
I'm
like,
an hour.
I'm not making you sit. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, it's good. It's a good length.
That's the most you're going to get out of me.
Absolutely.
The most you're going to get out of me.
Yeah. Other than that, it's like verbal diarrhea.
I mean, when a TV show starts doing these 90-minute episodes, it's like full movies. You're like, I didn't agree to this. I gave you a maximum 1 hour if you're a drama.
Yeah.
Max. 57 minutes. Be respectful, please.
Yeah. So I can go on TikTok for 4.5 hours.
I'm just so busy.
I am so busy swiping TikTok. Let me live my life.
Now, Cynthia, you came in this podcast at Crispy, I believe, 7.5.
Yeah.
Crispy, was it?
Crisp.
Yeah, I
just crisp. I don't know why.
Crispy.
My analogy there was like, it's like a clean 7.5, because I was playing with decimals in my head and I was like, no, it's 7.5.
And then I made it crispy. I went, ooh, delicious on this number.
That makes me want bacon.
Yeah, there you go. I gave you the bacon score. You said you were an open book. We've opened you up quite a bit. You have shared fabulous things with me. I feel like I've learned about a whole new world and somebody's journey in it. Yeah. I love it. I absolutely love it. How are you feeling now? Does it affect you to share things? Do you sometimes question the things you've said, or are you somebody
put
it out there and that's
the end
of it?
You've made me smile. You've made me laugh a lot. I love how many commonalities we have. I feel like that bumped me up to an 8. I love finding common ground. I feel like
me too.
The middle child factor, that was a ding. And then the teaching, the experience as having teachers for
parents.
That's a big one. It's hard because sometimes you don't want to you don't want to like smear campaign teachers because they're like teaching the future, and there's a lot of sainthood kind of around it. But my experience, it had complications, so I do like to talk about it a little bit. So I love that that's your experience too.
I had a I was just getting caught up in things that I did not need to be caught up in. That was my teacher's, and a lot of eyes on me around the town. I also grew up in a small town, and it was really the teacher spying on me to report back to my mom. And I was like, this is not okay, because they all talk.
Absolutely.
Not okay.
No, absolutely.
They all talk.
And funny, and I know we're wrapping soon, Alana, but it's this weird sense of celebrity that, like, when I was a kid, and, like, your teachers are kind of in this weird microenvironment as a child. They're kind of celebrity-like. And so that all eyes on you factor, I've always kind of, for better or worse, dealt with that equation, like, in my life. So it's, like, as becoming, like, a public figure and, like, public facing, like, to me, I'm, like, there's something there. There's some reason I was drawn to it. It's, like, whether
I've been in the limelight since day one as the shit disturber of Orangeville, Ontario.
Hello? Like, that's just it. Yeah. What
I've
else is
made
new?
It.
Yeah. Exactly.
There's nothing else new.
Yeah.
You and I were born here, and we'll be here, and we'll stay here. Thank you so much.
Hell yes.
Cynthia, before we go, tell us about the podcast. Tell us everything.
Yes. Well, so my sister.
Let's get the full description.
If you love my voice, you can hear it every week on Semi-Qualified Queens with myself, Cynthia Kiss, and my drag sister, Juicebox. We were both on Canada's Drag Race. I was on the second season, Juice was on the first, and we do Drag Race recap, all things drag. We get some drag alumni guests, we do interviews, we cover it all, and it's a good time. I feel like it's my catch-up with Juice, what we do throughout our week. Sometimes we're touring, we're on the road, we take our mics, and we keep recording, and yeah, it's so exciting to join the Sonar Network. I'm like,
yes,
I'm honored. It's been a year, and I feel like this was the perfect chance to kind of bring new life into the podcast by joining a network.
And Juice is actually going to be, I think we record next week.
Yes.
So Juice will also be on the show, which is fantastic, and I'm excited to hear another side of the experience.
She's so
really
cool.
Excited
she's
to hear that.
She's
yeah.
amazing. I love Juice. She's very funny, and like I find our skills that complement each other, and we didn't know each other very well before the podcast, which was kind of the best way to do a podcast with someone, because I feel like we surprise each other all the time, and we just come with like our two networks as far as like Canadian drag, and it's quite expansive, and our audience is growing. So check it out if you want to keep hearing me talk.
Oh my God, I insist everybody checks it out. It sounds awesome, and it's also like, you know, it's you're bringing a voice to like something that people really love, a show that everybody loves, and your personal experience, and then opening up the rest of the world of it that maybe not everybody knows.
Oh,
so
completely.
It's like I think
I always say it feels it feels like two drag queens talking backstage at a show. Because it's very conversational. It has lots of tangents. And the drag race is kind of our excuse to get together. So we recap the show. So you'll know what we're talking about if you also watch Drag Race. But then you get to, you know, find out all our little tidbits and tangents.
You know, that's what's going to keep the listeners coming. It's like we... Yes, everybody loves to hear the guests and hear new people and new experiences and stuff like that. But it's like you're building that audience. They're coming for you, too.
Oh, absolutely.
And that's just so great that you two are having such a good time together doing it. Because why not? What's to not have a good time about? I'm having a blast.
Right? Now we're Sonar sisters.
Now we're Sonar sisters.
The NAR.
Cynthia. The NAR. What an absolute treat. And I can't wait until I can come to a show and I can see you in person one day, because listen, I'm bopping all over the town, so
and
I might show up.
And I'll be in LA for DragCon LA in mid-May, so we're probably going to have some shows around then.
Oh my God, I'll be there. But give me notice so I can get tickets, because I know this stuff really is huge here and definitely sells out. But like, please, I would love to come.
Okay, amazing. We're ironing out details right now, but you'll be in the tip top of my list.
Oh my God, I insist. You know what? BCC me on those irons.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Let me sort this out for you.
Hi, just jumping in here.
Cynthia, this was a treat. Thank you so much, and I can't wait to meet you in person.
Oh, thanks, Alana. Be well.
Bye. Believe in yourself. Believe in yourself.